Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bri or fine dine? Stay tuned to High FM on 101.9. Join Sharon Lurie and Adrian Bugatti for Essen Fressen, Tuesday mornings from 11 a.m., where it's all about the food.
Hi, good morning and welcome to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife. And on this but overcast, miserable day, ready to jump into bed with a lovely cappuccino and read a new book. Of course, it's been a week of fun. Mind you, I say read a new book. Who's got time at the moment? It's been a week of fun, food, and fabulous shortcuts. Why shortcuts? Because I'm getting ready for a simcha. My son and his beautiful Hannah arrived from London. And please God, they'll be here next week. And so the fun, the eating, the dancing, and all the excitement in between. And I believe, I don't know if anybody can tell me, I've forgotten the name of, there's a dance that you do when your last child gets married in Yiddish. It's a broom dance or something. Like we sweep the children out the house now. Anyway, these are just some of our mushugas, some of our crazy things that we do. Anyway, of course, on the show, I've got a wonderful, wonderful guest who I actually interviewed last week because he was in South Africa. So I'm very excited. I must say I'm quite honored, in fact, to have been able to make the time to have this fascinating guy on radio. He is the first South African ever to win the coveted Michelin star. One of South Africa and the world's most renowned and most craved and most wanted stars in any restaurants. So what is a Michelin star? Do you remember the Michelin man, the tire man? Well, it's a French tire company, and they created a Michelin guide in the 1900s. So what happened, how it all started was, the tire company wanted customers to wear out their tires quicker, obviously, and to use their cars, because there weren't many cars out. I mean, at that stage, about 3,000 cars in France. And so what they wanted to do, what they did was they put guides, road maps, and get people to start going, venturing out in their cars. And on the road maps, there was and the book taught you how to change tires, how to, the closest mechanic to you, petrol stations, places to visit, and eating places. And how the star works is that for one star, it means it's a very good restaurant, high quality, and really worth a stop. The second, two stars meant that it was excellent, and the cooking was worthy of a detour. And the third star was exceptional cooking, worth a special journey. So, obviously, the ratings are determined by totally anonymous inspectors, mostly foodies and chefs. And it's the highest honor for European chefs. And it's now becoming very, very popular in America. So the person that I'm going to be visiting, I will straight after the ad break. I know you've seen him on Showmax. You've seen him on YouTube, on Carte Blanche, every food magazine around. You've read his journals, which are actually filled with hundreds of pages of fascinating reading and pictures. He's done three journals. He's on to his fourth now. And soon you'll be hearing him on Chai FM. So I'm rather honored and star-trekked to be starstruck. See, I can't even get it out. I'm so excited to be interviewing this author, winemaker, and restaurateur. I'll tell you all about him after the break.
You're listening to the Essen Fressen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back to the Essen Fressen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, and as I said to you before, we are going to be talking to a very special man. His name is Jan, and I'm sure that you've seen his journals at Woolworths, etc. But I did say that it's been quite an exciting week and that I've had to cook a few things very, very quickly because we've been busy baking and doing other things for the wedding. So I decided, let me share before we get on to Jan van der Westhuizen, Jan Hendrik van der Westhuizen, I must say, let's chat a little bit about the quick and easy meals I've been making that certainly wouldn't get me a Michelin star, but may have helped towards the little tire around my tummy. Anyway, whenever I served mince, my kids, whilst growing up, would always say, oh, no, Ma, not mince again. But I've always said, you know, the shoemaker goes without shoe, the butcher's wife goes without meat. So I said to them, okay, so what would you prefer? What do you want for supper? Let's make it. Everybody chooses something every day of the week. So one said burgers, one said bolognese, one said cottage pie. One said saucy meatballs and spicy chili and coriander mince with the nachos. One said meat blintzes, chili con carne, crumbled meat stir fry, chunky mince shawarma. Oh, that was a favorite. Thai cigars, a Thai mince and rice noodles, sausage rolls, Cornish patties, Moroccan cigars, curried mince and rotis, bunny chow. And there's at least 12 of their favorite dishes, all made with mince. So, never mind their complaining. So, of course, time being of the essence and the build-up to the cooking and baking for the wedding, let me share a lovely meat dish with you that just happened to contain mince. And actually, it's a combination of two recipes. It's a spicy mince and stir fry on a bed of jasmine rice. And just for the two of us, all I needed was 500 grams of mince. And the secret to this lovely dish is that you actually use a large frying pan and you heat up a little oil until it's really hot and you add the mince and fry it until the edges are golden brown. And then you turn down the heat and you add pen and paper. So we've got our 500 grams of mince, which is cooking away beautifully. And let's get ready with 1 tablespoon of grated ginger, 1 to 2 teaspoons of crushed garlic. Yeah, we love garlic. 1 teaspoon of chopped chili. Now you can add more chili, but we like it hot, so I add more chili. Some people don't. Now, do know that you can actually get those lovely little things from Woolworths that are kosher. It's the grated chili, the garlic, and the ginger in a little thing. I think there's 4 of them. So you'd only use 1 little cube for your garlic. And then you'd need I'd say about 1/4 cup of soya, maybe a little bit more. You'll taste it. You'll see as you go along. 1 teaspoon of sugar because you just want to cut the tartness from the soya and the small sachet of tomato paste that you're going to use. I think a 10 gram one is good enough. And you mix that together while the meat is frying and you add that to the meat, turn that, the heat down, and you just keep on cooking it and mixing it around, and while you're frying that together and mixing it, add 1 heaped tablespoon of corn flour, mezina, dissolved in 1 cup of cold water. Must be cold because mezina doesn't dissolve in hot water. And you add it to the meat and you stir it all up until it thickens and you remove it from the frying pan, but don't wash the pan yet. Add a little bit more oil and you just fry. Now, if you're in a real hurry, just buy a kilo pack of your favorite stir fry vegetables, frozen, or you can get fresh if you want. Fresh is obviously nicer, but if you get the frozen ones, just allow them to defrost. Take them out in the sort of early afternoon lunchtime and defrost it in a strainer and sprinkle Sprinkle it with a tablespoon of starch, which the moisture from the frozen vegetables absorbs and tends to make the vegetables a little more crunchy. If you're using fresh veggies, you can either buy them fresh veggies at Fresh Fellers or wherever. They have a stir-fry packet, I think. And, or you just use a mandolin. Be very careful. I'm petrified of mandolins, but I love them. The mandolin is a slicer, a very, very sharp slicer. And you can cut up, I don't know, your favorite vegetables, red peppers, things that sort of cook at the same time. So you'd want to use red peppers, slice up some celery very thinly, onion. You can leaf the onion. That is, you cut it into four and then just pull the leaves apart. Some cabbage, nice. I saw some lovely Chinese cabbage the other day. Slice up some of that and add it at the end, towards the end. Carrots. You can cut it all up julienne style. And you just put that, a little bit of oil in that frying pan that you fry the meat in. And you fry it on high heat because stir frying needs high heat, but constant watching because you don't want anything to burn. Nothing worse than the taste for me of burnt cabbage or a burnt vegetable. And just stir it all the time. Reduce the heat, add the meat, and warm it all the way through for another 3-4 minutes. Remember, you still want those vegetables to be nice and crispy. And then you serve it over jasmine rice topped with toasted sesame. Okay, so that's quite a simple dish to do and something to have during the week, to eat during the week. Of course, I actually learned something that was quite interesting this week. And that was, you don't actually, if you are eco-friendly and you want to save a little bit on electricity, if you want to use pasta in the dish instead and you don't want to serve it over jasmine rice, you can actually heat up pasta, not in a deep pasta pot. A, because you're wasting water. B, because you're wasting electricity boiling it all up. But put it in a frying pan in cold water and bring it to the boil. And just watch it and get it to how you like it, al dente. And because you don't use so much water, that water thickens up from the starch. So it's actually quite nice to keep it if you need to add a little bit more moisture to the stir fry and chili beef, as I was talking about before. Instead of using jasmine rice, you can just use pasta. It's actually quite easy, simple enough. But what's even easier is you go fry a little bit of mince, go to Woolworths, or buy your favorite pasta sauce, break up a couple of pieces of basil, put in a little bit of extra garlic, and if you feel like a little bit more sauce, you just add some of the water from the pasta, and that'll thicken it up. After the break, I'm coming back to you with our lovely interview with Jan Hendrik van der Westhuizen, and thank you.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back to the SN Fresen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, getting all my tired up here. But it's because I'm so starstruck by the man that I interviewed. You've seen him on Showmax, as I said, on YouTube, Carte Blanche, every food magazine, on the TV, on radio, everywhere. And I'm now taking you into the interview that I had with Jan Hendrik. Welcome to the show, Jan Hendrik van der Westhuizen. Wow, we finally got it together. I can't believe it. We've been trying to do this, I think, for nearly a year.
And no, it's not that long.
And what a way to start 2020, having you as my first guest. We've got so much to chat about that I just didn't even know where to start. So let's not waste time and let's go straight into it. I'm sure you're exhausted from last night. Am I right?
I'm perfect. We've been doing some dinners at the Innovation Studio in Cape Town.
Yes.
And tonight we're launching season 2 of Jan, the TV show. So I'm kind of on a high, which is incredible.
Oh, good. Okay, so we can keep this a high-spirited show. Okay.
Exactly.
But we'll talk about your next show a little later. By the way, I mean, I loved the first season, which is on Showmax. Everybody, you can watch it on Showmax. And it was just, the music in the first season just made me want to take a glass of wine, meander into the
kitchen.
That's
not really what the chef wants to hear. I think we want the food.
But the music was, the food, I mean, the food is incredible.
It all adds up. I think it's the experience of doing something and viewing it that makes the whole, exactly what you said, just put your feet up and have a glass of wine and just travel in your chair. And that's what it's about.
Exactly. And now you, talking about traveling, you are an amazing journey. From Nelspruit to international stardom on the French Riviera, the jet set lifestyle. not that I believe any chef actually leads a jet set lifestyle. Believe me, because...
Well, I always wanted to be a pilot, and my eyesight, unfortunately, left me behind somewhere along the road. And now I'm traveling between my two favorite countries in the world.
Yes.
I'm super spoiled. But yes, born in Nelspruit, that's right.
Yeah. And so tell us about Jan Hendrik, how it started for you and the farm, burning your grandmother's Persian carpet in your, was it in your make-believe restaurant?
In the forest. I was exactly sitting, kind of just putting on the AMC pots on the fire and having so much fun with pretending I was hanging paintings on the trees, and it was just my little restaurant, you know, in the forest. And
yes.
That was my dream, yeah.
And here you've climbed onto your... When did you actually climb onto the first flight that you couldn't, unfortunately, pilot yourself? But when did you actually leave to go to France?
So, Sharon, my mother actually bought an anti-rust product on Verimark when I was 12 years old.
Yes.
And she entered herself automatically into this competition, and she won a fully expenses paid trip to France.
Wow.
It was like unreal. We're from the farm in Middelburg. We've never even left Middelburg, never mind going to Johannesburg.
Yeah.
So she went to Europe with my father, and I remember so clearly, I was so jealous. I was just like at home crying. I was this little boy with blonde hair, and I was just like, I want to go with you. And I said to myself, one day I'm going to go to France. And she brought back a France magazine. I remember it. And I studied the language from that magazine, and I could then clearly say, bonjour, bienvenue à bord. You know, just like the basic things that the French would say. And I first set foot in France when I was 24 years old with Elle magazine as contributing food editor for them.
Oh, okay.
So pushed my way through the styling and the chefing world, studied graphic design and photography.
Yes.
And did a fabulous stunt in Paris, and then I moved to the south in Monaco, and then I did private chefing. And as all chefs, I think all chefs should do this once in their life, is take a gap year and, you know, work on a yacht or work at a resort or something.
Yes.
And I just saved up a good chunk of money and opened up this incredibly small, cheap and cheerful restaurant called Jan.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, Nelly Steenkamp, your teacher, must be so proud of
you. Yes, how do you know Nelly? Do you know her?
No, I follow you. I read your journals. you've got a little fan here. A little old fan, and I must say, if anybody goes into Woolworths, okay, I can say this because I'm old enough to be your mother, there you will see this beautiful book called Jan, the Journal, and I'm sure most of you have seen it when you're in that queue waiting to go and pay, and there's this elegant, good-looking man sitting at his table with his linen tablecloth and his, tell us a little bit about the restaurant. What does it look like? Are you very into linen and all these?
Yes. I don't know where, I think my grandmother used to kind of take out, I had two grandmothers, and the one was just like really kind of the opposite of the other. She was the, let's take out the true circus, chase and open up and, you know, like take out the beautiful crockery and the fine porcelain and the napkins. And the other one was just like keeping it all for I don't know when. So yes. Somehow, you know, putting a beautiful napkin, just touching your lips and that quality of just simplicity, but quality. So Jan is very much like that. It's we've got a dark blue, a Hague blue, it's the name of the color.
Yes.
And it's only 24 seats.
Yes.
And we're 16 staff running the restaurant, of which six is from South Africa.
Right.
And then right opposite Jan, you've got Maria, which is the name of my grandmother.
Okay.
And also, I mean, there's this funny relationship between Jan van Riebeek and Maria de la Galerie.
Yes.
You know, they're sitting opposite. Exactly. And Maria was, her mother was actually French, Maria de la Galerie.
Uh-huh.
So there's a very nice layering of concepts happening. And then, yeah, it's just the atmosphere, lots of candlelight, everything is curated.
Yeah, and you think it was, what was it, a mechanics workshop that you turned into this?
It was an old Vespa workshop.
Vespa, yes.
And exactly. And like I said, it was really affordable.
Yes.
And we did some work in it, and I installed a very simple kitchen, which is the size of a Patco bus. I mean, it's really, really the half of it. It's so small.
Yeah.
And we're just flying in there, and we're dancing with each other. It's just a beautiful, I love Jan. I mean, the space for me, I would never change it.
Oh, fantastic. And then, so now the kind of food that you're serving at the moment, do you have a menu, or is it a tasting sort of menu that, you know, this is what
yes.
you're having, or...
So Sharon, we yeah. started off, the restaurant, we opened it 7 years ago, and I started with a la carte menu, and you know, it was one of those things, there was so much wastage, like people would come back for the same thing, and then I started going, well, the most popular dishes, obviously, and we cooked South African from the beginning, we
yes.
did Babuati and Mospolikis, and we made our own biltong from Charolais beef, so there was a lot of... like old traditional recipes that came through the dishes. And I just selected a few and I've just mastered those. I think we changed the menu for roughly about every 3 months, which is not a total change, but it's just adjusting the season and the produce. And
it's traditional South African food with a sort of maybe a French flair.
A little
twist.
Bit of... I don't want to use the word nouvelle cuisine. It's comfort food. And
right.
I think like any, like a magazine or a theater show or any art should have a kind of a rhythm, you know.
Yes.
And you go, you reach a point and you think, that was so light and crispy and just, and then you move on and you get something a bit more filling and then you move again to something light. It's all about textures and temperatures.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, we really played with all of this stuff. And then 2016 is the evening, 28th of January, when I received the call on a Friday evening.
You've got to explain this to us. This is when you received the call about the Michigan.
Exactly.
Oh,
and
wow.
This was, I promise you, like, I actually get goosebumps when I talk about this because my team, I remember my maitre d', he opened the restaurant with me and he worked at the Ritz and the Savoy in London.
Wow.
And he's kind of, he was like my father then. He's just retired at the moment.
Yes.
But he said to me, "Chef, you are crazy. What you want to do here, you are crazy." And, you know, we got that call, and I didn't want to take it. I was quite hesitant to take the call because it was a strange French person that wanted to talk to me. And then there was this beautiful thing. I just understood étoile, star, and Guide Michelin. And he said that you are the first South African in the history to get a Michelin star, and we need you to be in Paris on Monday. And
wow.
I was like, you are kidding me. You know, this is, I'm a Burki. Don't need to run, you know. Please be honest with this. And It was just tears. Yeah, me and my team couldn't believe it.
You know, in the old days, we would say it's John Burke's playing a prank with you on 702.
Exactly. I mean, well, it was like that. Yeah. Exactly like that.
So what do they do, the judges? They sort of come in cloak and dagger style and sit in the restaurant and disguise themselves, or what do they do?
Sharon,
they
let you know they're there. We really don't know what they're really after, and I think that's what makes Michelin so kind of strong internationally is that the judges, you would never see the same judge. So it's just random people. They can be up from one person to six people. They come up to 3-4 times per year, and they literally just look at, as far as I understand, everything. Food is a major role, and then just how you combine everything into this one experience. And if the chef has a signature, and I think that's very important with anything anybody does, is we need to leave a mark behind.
Right.
If it's sustainability, or if it's consideration, or if it's heritage or innovation, or we need to leave something, and people should see that. And
so what's on the menu at the moment?
Oh, we've got my flagship dish at the moment, it's a camel milk haddock cream, which I'm quite obsessed with at the moment. You remember the days we used to smoked haddock in milk?
I spoke about it, in fact, on the radio, I think last week or the week before.
Oh, really?
About haddock. And I was saying, why don't we ever see haddock anymore?
I love that, that whole smoky aroma.
Yes.
And that's being served with, chorizo, which we turned now into, we're taking boerewors. And we're doing this beautiful potato boerewors, and then serving thinly shaved apple, which is frozen on top, and then you pour this sauce around it.
Wow.
So there's this smoky freshness. It's quite delicious. We've got that. We've got biltong lamingtons, which we've never taken off the menu. That's quite a classical. We do jelly and custard. We do peaches with ideal milk. Then we're playing on the idea also of having a braai literally in the restaurant.
I was going to say, what about petit pap?
We do pap, absolutely. Pap and caviar. That's quite popular. And you remember, we're right next to Monaco. So you can't lose the caviar, unfortunately. But I think, again, the contrast is quite something.
Yes, I saw you actually, I was reading the other day how you make the mock caviar, which is very interesting.
Yes, exactly.
We can't
that's
go
in the
into
journal.
Detail about that. And so now, are you sort of an out there kind of chef to go out and talk to the people and get to know people? Is that you?
I'm very much. If I don't see a face that I'm cooking for, it's almost impossible for me to serve and to really connect to that plate of food. And I almost don't like to serve strangers or to cook for strangers. And it sounds really ridiculous because I've got opening a second restaurant. But being in the front is so vital for, just the person who curates the food, who's putting it on the plate, just to see who is actually going to eat it.
Right. Tell us about the second restaurant that you're opening.
Yes, so we started about 3 years ago, a conversation with Jonathan and Nikki Oppenheimer, and I always wanted to come back to South Africa in the middle of nowhere. I wanted something, I didn't want to go mainstream, Cape Town, it was just like, it needs to be small, and it needs to be really kind of
You want to be in the forest that you were in when you were a little boy.
Exactly. Except I'm in the Green Kalahari now, which is the most beautiful part of South Africa.
Really?
It's going to be called Klein Jan, which my grandmother used to call me. And it's all based, the main focus point of this restaurant is the old Koolstoof, agar, which is literally in the middle of the restaurant, and that's where it's exactly the same one I grew up with. So Klein Jan will serve local Kalahari. We've got a radius around the reserve where we're getting our produce from.
Yes.
We just want to it's a territory that's really not been discovered, you know, in a in a fine dine concept. So that's pretty much what we're out to do.
Oh, fantastic. So so the South Africans can now travel to the Kalahari and taste Young's food.
Not exactly. We're opening in November, and it will be open to public. We're still figuring out how to get the people there. But
just tell them to drive to Cape Town, and on their way, they need to stop.
Exactly. Well, you're going to go a little bit more north than that. But it's a very exciting project. There's so many elements of surprise, of surprises happening in the building. It's a 100-year-old building that we're restoring to its natural beauty. Wow. And then there'll be an incredible journey that takes the guest underground into a root cellar, which is just going to be magnificent.
It's
going to be really quite something.
Sounds absolutely amazing. Now, while you're here in South Africa, I know you have people running your restaurant in Nice. Are you the kind of guy, the chef, that can let go? Or are you, how can I explain it, like my brother-in-law, okay, comes out from America, comes out from Texas, and he has a furniture factory. This guy, I think, spends more time sitting on his computer or his whatever, or his phone, watching everybody in the factory. And I say, have a holiday. Do you do the same?
No, I'm kind of having holding a tight leash on everything. And but I think, Sharon, it's really the people you surround yourself with.
Yes, I agree.
My team has been with me for over 4 or 5 years. I'm very blessed that they, you know, they stick with me. They stick with our ethos of working, just the vision we have for what we're doing. And, I trust them 200%. We are like brothers. Yes, I mean, I do move around a lot. I do make the surprise entrance now and there. And I do love being in the kitchen. And I think that's, you know, it's something that could be stripped from you so quickly.
I have to ask, what do you eat when you come home? Do you sit in the kitchen and have a peanut butter sandwich?
I would literally be so embarrassed if I would tell you. I think
I
have such a sweet tooth, and late at night, I've finished about 1 o'clock, and I'm going to get killed for this, but McFlurries is my ultimate. Okay. And you know what, Sharon, you can't order one with Uber Eats. You need to order four.
So those
to justify the delivery. So that's my bad side of food. I love making spaghetti bolognese and just putting it in the fridge for the rest of the week. And of course then just very simple stuff like boiled eggs. I love chickpeas, tinned tuna, throw those things together. Boiling up cabbage with onion and potato with white pepper and dollops of butter, you know, just like stuff I grew up with. That's really not complicated.
What do you miss most from South Africa?
The people, without a doubt.
And the meat. And the meat. You've got to say the meat.
Yes. We've got incredible meat in this country, and I've overindulged slightly over the season. So I'm trying to stay away from the meat for a bit, but definitely, I think the people, you know, you just get that smile and you feel it's really the people.
Right. And if you could live anywhere in the world, where do you spend most of your time? Do you spend, you know?
So the mothership is based in Nice in France, and that's where I'm based most of the time. Yes. And then I do every 6-7 weeks, I do a South African trip for 1 week in the Kalahari and 1 week in Cape Town. We opened the Jan Innovation Studio in Cape Town, which is
fantastic.
Also, it's the kind of office the place where we run the media side from, for the journal, for the publications, our online blog, all those things. And students literally doing practicals there, experimenting and innovating with myself.
Fantastic. Did you have formal training formal?
I did, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, I've qualified as a pastry chef.
Yes.
And after pastry, I did a degree in applied design and photography.
Okay. Oh, well, that's why your books are so magnificent. I mean, the photographs, the styling, everything is beautiful.
Yeah, I love beauty. I think that's so important in today's life.
Yeah, I can't wait for book four to come out. Now, as you said tonight, you are launching the second series on Showmax. And yes. How's the second season going to differ from the first, or is it going along the same road?
No, it's very much the same kind of look and feel. We've added, it's more traveling involved.
Right.
And it's lots more vulnerability from my side. I've been through a very rough 2 years, family wise, and I've kind of opened up a lot during this season. We've filmed it over 2 years. So it is semi-documentary.
Yes.
And due to the first series, it's you being almost looking over my shoulder while I'm cooking. It's not a typical cooking show.
Right.
And it's poetic, and the music, as you said, the music on this one is even more incredible. There's over 160 original soundtracks that's literally just been kind of fluently put together and really making this incredible piece of art.
Yes. Okay, so before we start winding down a little, one thing I have to ask you, because everybody asks the chef, what is their favorite ingredient at the moment? If I have to walk into your kitchen, what would I find in your fridge or cupboard?
You would find, I'm just obsessed with chickpeas. I think I'm so busy at the moment. It's just, I open them up, drain them, vinaigrette, and I just eat them like that. I love it. A little bit of parmesan, just if I've got fresh herbs going with it, it's just loads of chickpeas.
Oh,
and also watermelon. I love to grill watermelon. I've just
grilling
done
watermelon.
That a few times in South Africa now over the summer season, and it's the most beautiful flavor, just putting a thick slice of watermelon on the barbecue.
Okay, so you just stick it on the barbecue and braai through, and that's it.
Before you put the meat on, you just, it's a steak of watermelon. You can baste it with miso or with teriyaki, and it just glazes so deliciously. I mean, you can just top it with rocket or beautiful parma ham or anything that's going with the sweetness of the watermelon.
Uh-huh. Okay. And one more point. What's your best cooking utensil? In your small kitchen, as you call it.
I'm addicted to the Japanese mandolin, which is such a versatile piece of equipment. I mean, most recently I received a very beautiful gift. It's a duck press from from the late 18, early 1900s, and it's so beautiful, and it's literally putting a duck carcass in it, and you just press all the juices out of that bird, and you use that for your sauce reduction.
Wow. Okay.
So quite medieval, a little bit vibes, but super, super practical.
Okay, because I must say, mandolin, I use my mandolin very often, and my favorite saying, in fact, as I took it out the other day, my helper turned around to me and she said to me, "For God's sake, don't cut your fingers." Because every time I take it out, I say the same thing to her. So this time she said it before I could say anything.
It is amazing. I mean, it just transforms anything into crispy, light, you know, that you can do so much with it.
Absolutely. I love my mandolin. Well, I'm going to be sharing some of your recipes from your journals and some from your site. And follow Jan on Instagram. Do yourselves a favor. And you've just got to step into the life of Jan Hendricks. It's janhendricks.com, correct?
Yes, the website is janhendrick.com. And then on Instagram, it's janhendrick.com.
Okay, not Hendricks, it's Hendrick.com. Okay, and when I say I'm taking a giant, take a step, what I really mean is just take a giant leap into what you offer us. I mean, as you say, you always look at life through the food celebrated by the people around you. And yes. That to me was that was so important, because I'm just at the moment doing a big catering job, and the people around me are just, everybody is just so happy and just loves being with the family.
Amazing.
And they're from London, so I'm doing, you know, South African food, but of course I have to do a little bit of English food for those that are not used to pap and
wors,
you know.
So, but that's it. That's really it. I mean, it's just tables of love and sharing it with people around you.
Yes.
Very important.
Very, very important. Well, Jan Hendricks, as I said before, I'm starstruck. I'm absolutely blown away. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And thank you for making my first 2020 interview such a beautiful one. Thank you.
I'm honored. Thank you, Sharon. Have a wonderful 2020. We'll see you at Klein Jan.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show on 101.9 High FM.
Hi, welcome back to the show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the Kosher Butcher's wife, and I have been chatting, as you heard, to Jan Hendricks. Mandvesta is the first South African chef to get a Michelin star. As I explained earlier in the show what a Michelin star is, but if you don't know what it is, go and to the internet. It's something that every chef, or almost every chef, just desires and wants for himself. A question here. Where will this restaurant be exactly? I missed it, Warren. Okay, so the restaurant that he's got at this moment is in Nice, but he's opening one in South Africa. And it's quite funny because I said to him, well, when people go to Cape Town, they can just come past your restaurant, confusing the Kalahari with the Karoo. So it will be in the Kalahari, and it's part of a project that he's doing with the Oppenheimers. And it's called Klein Jan. So if you go to it's a private game reserve or whatever, I'm sure that they'll be able to hook you up with some kosher food, and you can have it with a Michelin stars flair. So through Chai FM, you connect to the world, to Israel, and to global listening community. But now you can connect to the heart of the station. Download our free app to listen live. Contact the studio, office, or helpline at One Touch. Find it on the Google App Store, Chai FM. Just look for the logo. The Chai FM app is brought to you by Binary Headquarters. So do that when you can. If I've managed to do it, then anybody can do it. So as I said, I'm going to share something with you from Jan's book. I mean, Jan talks about, yes, we've got peaches and condensed milk. Well, it's not just peaches and condensed milk. I mean, these are beautiful made peaches, and the condensed milk is turned into an ice cream. Well, I think it was Ideal Milk or condensed milk. It's turned into an ice cream, and then he puts it, all this white condensed milk, around on a plate, and then he drops the peach in the middle. So actually, it looks like a fried egg, but it's not a fried egg. Okay, so here is his pearl couscous, which is the Israeli couscous that you see. It's more like a pasta with mushrooms and creamy mustard sauce. So let's start with couscous, he said. It might look suspiciously like a grain, but it's actually more of a pasta, which comes from wheat, which is a grain. We've gone full circle, or have we? Couscous is made by rubbing semolina with wet hands, which results in those tiny pasta particles we all love and adore. Pearl couscous, or Israeli couscous on the other hand, is also a kind of pasta, but it's made from a combination of wheat flour and semolina. These results in larger pearls of couscous that are toasted, giving it a nuttier flavor and a chewier texture. Pairing it with large mushrooms and a creamy mustard sauce is just so satisfying. And it really was satisfying. It's 250 grams of brown mushrooms, 45 mils of butter, or I suppose you could use cardon, orli, cardon, maybe a little bit of olive oil, salt and fresh ground black pepper, 375 mils of water, 250 mils of pearl couscous. Remember, it's a pearl couscous that's a little bit bigger. 50 grams of baby herb leaves. 250 mils of cream, or you could use Oily Whip, or I suppose you could use Riches or soya. 60 mils of Dijon mustard, the ready-made one. And you just preheat the oven to 180. Place the mushrooms bottoms up in an oven dish and dot with butter or your marge. Season with salt and pepper. Place the dish in the oven and bake for about 20 minutes until the mushrooms are soft. Bring the water to a boil in a saucepan. Add the couscous and let it simmer for about 10 to 15 minutes until all the water is absorbed and the couscous is soft. Season with salt and pepper. Add the herb leaves to the couscous and plate. Heat the cream. Now, the herb leaves can be basil, it can be rocket, whatever you want the herb leaves to be. You heat the cream to just before boiling point. You add the mustard and you season it with salt and pepper again. You add the arranged mushrooms on top of the couscous and you drizzle the sauce over it. Now, the key, of course, he says, to fluffy couscous is when cooking couscous, a lot of people simply add an equal quantity of boiling water to a bowl of dry couscous and cover it with a plate for 5 minutes. But this doesn't allow you any control of the texture. Instead, cook it in a saucepan, stirring it every so often with a fork to keep it nice and fluffy. Okay, so that's a recipe from Jan's journal. That is his journal number 3. I'm sure journal number 4 is about to land on the shelves. Have I got time for one quick one? No. Well, okay, it's called Peppered Short Rib. And what we've been doing on a Friday night lately, as you know, it's a very big, it's 25 of us, and it's growing and growing and bigger. So what we do is we do one pot wonders, we call it. So who's at the house that has it, it's at that Friday night, that person makes salad or the fruit salad or whatever, and everybody brings a one pot wonder. So our one pot wonder this week is going to be, you don't have to make 25 pieces, of course. You just make enough for you and your husband and one or two other people, and you all sort of share your one pot wonders. And a dish that doesn't need frying the onions, then the carrots, and then the celery, and, you know, to make a mirepoix. This is a one-pot, quick and easy, slow cooking, which just makes it so much quicker because you just stick it in the oven and slow cook it. And what it is I use 6 beef short ribs, about 250 to 300 gram ribs, a half a teaspoon of salt, a packet of onion soup, 8 cloves of garlic, or about 2 teaspoons of crushed garlic, if you like garlic, 2 tablespoons of tomato paste, 2 tablespoons of whole black peppercorns, freshly crushed, must be 2 full tablespoons, plus 1 heaped teaspoon of fine black pepper, 1 teaspoon of oregano, 1 teaspoon dried sage leaves, 2 teaspoons of rosemary, sort of crush it in your palm, a teaspoon of thyme, 2 bay leaves, and 2 cups of red wine. And you just place the meat into a large mixing bowl. And in another bowl, you combine the salt, the onion, the garlic, the tomato paste, the peppercorns, the pepper, and garlic and everything else. And then you add the tomato paste, and you just mash it all together, put it over your meat, fry it a little until it's brown. I use a heavy pot to fry it in with a lid, and then you cover it by pouring 2 cups of red wine down the side of the meat, because you don't want to wash all the beautiful tastes off. Okay, I have to wrap up, and stick it in the oven, and you just cook it on 180 for about an hour and a half, and then turn it down to 160 until it literally falls off the bone. Serve it on polenta, serve it in this thick, beautiful gravy, and enjoy. And that's what we're having for Shabbos. And if it's too watery, remember, boil up the sauce and it gets thicker. Have a wonderful weekend.